Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. So on this podcast, we talk about ideas and strategies. I share blueprints. I talk about some of my big epic fails that I've made along the way, because ultimately I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And when we think about creativity, we often think about physically making something. But creativity is also about problem solving. It's also about finding authentic problems that you are going to solve. It's about ideation and generating ideas. It's about being original. It's about all of these different ideas. And so it's not always just something physical and hands-on. Sometimes it's something mental and something verbal. And we often on this podcast talk about student-centered learning and what happens when students own the learning. And what we're going to talk about today fits perfectly into it. But it's actually something that's very old. It's that of the Socratic Seminar, which has been around since, well, Socrates. Actually, probably earlier than Socrates. Most historians of that time period would say that Socrates was just engaging in the process that was dominant within his Athenian society. But the bottom line is this is millennia years old, and yet it's evergreen and it's valuable. And we're going to talk about what it means to make Socratic seminars work for all students. But before we get started, I just want to tell you about a sketch video that I have. So I have this sketch video. You can find it at spencervideos.com. Again, that's spencervideos.com, where I make these educational videos. And I have this sketch video that goes over the main idea of this podcast, this whole idea of what the Socratic Seminar is and how it works. And if you like that video, would you do a huge favor for me? Would you click the like button on that video and then subscribe? There's a little subscribe button there. Subscribe to that video. The more people that like it and subscribe to it, the more it gets out there into the world and the more people are able to find my content on YouTube, which would mean a lot to me. So if you're willing to do that, please go to spencervideos.com. You'll find the Socratic Seminar video. Click the like button on it if you like it. And if you find the content useful, just consider subscribing via YouTube side. So what exactly are Socratic Seminars? Well, Socratic Seminars are a democratic, student-centered approach to class discussions. They can be used at any grade level with any subject area. In a Socratic Seminar, members meet in a circle, or, well, more likely an oval, because, well, let's be real, circles are really hard to create. And when they're together in this oval, imperfect circle, whatever you want to call it, they share their insights. Participants do not raise their hands. There's no calling on of names. And typically, there's no discussion leader. Now, you may have to at first to kind of add some scaffolding, but in general, there's no discussion leader, which means each member can comment or ask follow-up questions to one another. This approach can be empowering for participants because they own the conversation. Unlike a typical class discussion, the conversation moves fluidly back and forth rather than having to go through the teacher. You can imagine it like this. Think of the traditional class discussion. Teacher asks a question, calls on a student, student answers, and then the teacher calls on another student or paraphrases that student, calls on another student. You get the idea. But with a Socratic seminar, it's more interactive, it's more democratic, and there's no middle person of the teacher, right? In this case, it's just free-flowing, going back and forth between students, which I think can be really empowering. The Socratic Seminar, like I mentioned, isn't exactly new. It's been around for a long, long time. But sometimes older methods are actually more relevant now because they reveal the deeply human skills that we need in a world of things like artificial intelligence and machine learning. Often the most innovative approaches take these classic ideas and re-envision them in light of a new context. We end up with an overlap between best practices and next practices. And such is the case with the Socratic Seminar. When students engage in Socratic seminars, they learn the deeply human skills that they'll use for the rest of their lives. They engage in critical thinking, and they learn how to see truth as nuanced and complex. They learn how to speak up boldly and how to listen with empathy. What appears on the surface to be a messy conversation is actually an opportunity to develop the skills that they'll need for a democratic society. However, there is a risk that certain people will dominate the conversation. This actually happens all the time. Quieter participants don't speak up, and they wait their turn, and their turn never comes. It can be tricky for introverts who need just some additional processing time. And it can be challenging for ELL students or ESOL students who need that additional language support. Moreover, members of marginalized groups might be more reluctant to share their thoughts. That's why I'd like to explore some ways that we can design our Socratic seminar so every student can thrive in this process. But first, let's explore the features of a Socratic seminar. And then we're going to talk about some ideas for structuring them. Socratic seminars are ultimately student-centered. While the structures vary, here are some key components that you'll notice. Number one, students ask and answer the question while the teacher remains silent. Number two, students sit in a circle facing one another. Number three, there is neither the raising of hands nor the calling on of names. It's going to move in a free-flowing way. And then feature number four is that the best discussions are explanatory and open-ended rather than cut and dry debates. While a question might lead to a persuasive thought, the goal should be to examine points of view and construct deeper meaning rather than to argue two binary options. It's not a debate. That's the key thing to keep in mind. So how do we structure Socratic seminars? I want to share a few of the different approaches that you might use. The first is the most traditional. It's the giant circle, or let's be real, there are no perfect circles in a classroom, oval approach. Students sit together in a large circle or oval, and the desks are pushed all the way back. So there's no physical barrier between students. There's no front of the room in this approach. The students are all in a giant circle, sitting on chairs and facing each other with no physical barrier between them. The next approach is the quote fishbowl approach. And I've been looking at, you know, who originally created this approach, and there's a lot of different ideas about who was the originator of this. So I really can't say with pinpoint accuracy who came up with it first. But the basic idea is that you have an inner circle where students have the Socratic seminar discussion, and then an outside circle with observers. Students on the outside take notes on key ideas, and they might even at different times jot down some clarifying questions. And then when the discussion is over, they can ask whole group or individuals in the inside specific questions. So they take those clarifying questions and they ask those questions. In some cases, you might even do something like having students keep track of how often various students spoke in that approach. So that's the core idea of the fishbowl approach. Next, you have the roundtable approach. Unlike the fishbowl, students gather around a singular roundtable where they can lean in and discuss ideas. This can often lead to closer proximity, but it lacks some of the openness of a fishbowl. Really, this type of approach works best when you have smaller groups. The scattered approach is the next one, which is where students are in this semicircle, but instead of sitting on chairs, they might be sitting on the ground. They might have a couple of rows back and forth. Some students might be standing up toward the back. And really what you have is this sort of messy, scattered approach that in many ways was probably more indicative to what an actual original Socratic discussion looked like way back in antiquity. I can't say that word, antiquity. The next one that you can do is multiple seminars. If you have a large group, I'm thinking a massive class, say 40 students, what you might do is break it into 2 to 4 Socratic seminars. And then you can walk around and monitor these Socratic seminars. It's still bigger than a small group discussion, right? You're not looking at, you know, having 4 students discussing. You're looking at somewhere around, you know, 10 students having this Socratic seminar. And I think that's the key thing. You really want to have a ratio that allows for plenty of viewpoints. And if you only have, you know, 3 people, 5 people, the problem with that is that's just a small group discussion. That's not a true Socratic seminar. And then you can also do online, offline seminars. With this option, half the class is engaging in this online chat where they're going to be using, you know, a synchronous chat tool, like could be just a Gmail chat, for example. There might be different back channels you use. It might be a social media option, although you got to be really careful about that because social media tends to be so public. And along the way, while that's happening, you have other students engaging in this in-person Socratic seminar. And what I love about that option is some of the students who need more processing time do really well on the online version. Students who are worried about their voice and the way they speak, students who might need some language support with sentence stems, they can have those tools on the side that they look at while they engage in the Socratic seminar. Now, what does the actual Socratic seminar process look like? You could, if you want, just have an open-ended discussion and just run with it. But I found that it often works well to separate it into different phases. So here are the phases that I've used with Socratic seminars. Phase 1 is where you explain the process. Explain the Socratic seminar structure ahead of time. Here you include elements that might feel different to students. You're gonna have to explain to them, for example, yeah, you don't need to raise your hand. Nope, there is no teacher calling on you. It's gonna seem different. In this moment, you might also front load some of your vocabulary ahead of time to make sure all students have access to the language. Phase 2 is where you set the tone. In this phase is where you establish norms for the discussion, and it might be things like keep the language respectful, be clear and truthful, things like that. Phase 3 then is where you prepare for the discussion. And with this, you're beginning with a starting provocation. It could be that you do a really short concept attainment lesson. It could be that you do a quick experiment in something like science. It might be a problem-solving scenario in math. But often it's going to be a mentor text, a mentor podcast, a video that you're going to use to introduce a core idea. And while you're doing that, you're giving them a chance to dig deep into their analysis, asking about the construction of a text, the main idea, the message, finding facts to support claims. All of those things they'll engage in phase 3. And I have some sample questions on the blog post that corresponds to this podcast. You can check those out as well. Phase 4 is when you're going to begin your Socratic seminar. And in this phase, you start with some guiding questions for students. You could also start with some sentence stems that students can use. And again, what are you doing? You're allowing all students to participate by giving students scaffolding. So they've got these sentence stems. If they're English language learners, they have that. It's available for them. If they struggle with kind of formulating questions, maybe they're having a hard time with critical thinking, again, they have these questions set up for them ahead of time, and you're scaffolding it for them. And then in phase 5, you move it out and widen it, and this is where you broaden the discussion. So after starting with the text or the driving questions, students then broaden the discussion. They start asking each other questions. They answer the questions, and there's no hand raising. Students just share their thoughts and ideas. Now, that can be a little bit problematic. We're going to get into some ideas on how to fix the issue of one student dominating. But this is the idea of where they really take more ownership in the process. When it's almost done, they're going to move to phase 6 where they clarify and close. That's where they ask questions at the end together, like, are there any questions you still have? Is there anything that feels unsettled or unclear? Are there any takeaways that you'd like to share? And then in phase 7, they're going to debrief the experience. And here individually first, they're going to do a reflection. They could do a reflection survey if you want, and they could do something that's a little bit more open-ended. And then they're going to do a pair share of their reflection. And then as a whole class, you move into the place where all students are asking questions like, what was one thing someone said that really pushed your thinking? What was the process like for you? What could have been done to improve the process? And you're getting them to debrief that together with you. So now I want to talk about this idea of all students. What does it mean to ensure all students can participate? So first question you might have is, what happens if one student dominates the discussion? One option here is to give them talking chips. These would be things like poker chips, where every student gets a certain number of chips and they have to toss it into the middle of the pile each time that they speak up. Another option is to speak into the group every once in a while and interrupt them and say, if you've said something so far, I want you to wait until a few more people have shared, and I want someone to speak up who hasn't spoken up yet. And you kind of play the role of like a referee or an umpire in this moment. What happens if students don't participate? You might require all your students to participate, or you might even allow for students who they struggle with the language, they struggle with confidence. Maybe the Socratic seminar process is requiring a whole lot of executive function for them. You might let them pre-write a statement and then share their thoughts verbally and kind of ensure that they get a chance to share their insights with the group. But I think it's also important to remember that actively listening is a form of participation. And so you might have some examples of Socratic seminars where, well, maybe some students don't share their insights. Maybe they only listen, and they might at certain points ask questions. And that's good enough. So I think you got to navigate that on your own, knowing your students. What about the introverts who need internal processing time? One of the things you can do is give them 3 to 5 minutes before the seminar starts where they get think time. And then you have sort of a timekeeper in the group who pauses the group's discussion for a moment and just moves the group into a 1 or 2 minute silence, which can feel like a lot of time to kids, and then they get a chance to share their thoughts. So what you're doing is you're adding that introvert processing time. How can you ensure that the ELL students have access to the language? Well, I think you need to start the process by front-loading the vocabulary. So make sure that we all have shared vocabulary. You might also have to review some of the grammatical structures, some of the syntax that they're gonna see. And I think in this moment, you might give them some verb tense formulas and let them practice that a little bit. But the other thing you can do is give them a chance to write down their questions, rehearse their questions, and then engage in that process of asking questions during the Socratic seminar. And they can do the same thing with writing down their answers. You might do something where you add an additional wait time, where you have a Socratic seminar where everyone in this seminar is going to have additional wait time, and they know that there's going to be additional wait time. In the end, what I'll say is this: every student, even students who are shy, even students who are struggling, every student can benefit from a Socratic seminar. And I would actually say some of the students who will be the most uncomfortable with a Socratic seminar will gain the most from it. So I would encourage you to think about ways to make it inclusive and equitable and ensure that every student gets a chance to participate. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a huge favor? If you find this podcast useful, would you leave a review on Apple Podcast or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast? Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.